everyone, and welcome to The Forum, where science comes to socialize. My name is Aubrey, and I'm joined today in my co-hosting duties by my podcasting partners, Cleo and Daniela.
We've got a super hipster episode today, y'all.
No, we don't.
Yes, we do.
Okay, only superficially.
And it doesn't have to be hipster. It'll only come off that way if you're actively being your hipster self, Cleo. So be cool.
Doubtful.
Well, now I feel like I need to explain for the benefit of our listeners. The topic we'll be discussing today is actually sustainable agriculture, which, to Cleo's point, might come off a little hipstery. We'll actually be taking the conversation in a slightly different direction, sorry Cleo, and that we'll be focusing on how to make sustainable agriculture more profitable.
Ugh, that's almost anti-hipster.
So I guess with today's conversation, we've got some sustainable agriculture going on, which is Cleo's bread and butter, and then we'll be applying some economics context, which is nearer to Daniela's wheelhouse, and then I'm just tagging along here for the fun of it, really.
Aw, Aubrey, don't sell yourself short. You can represent the policy today. Or science communication.
Daniela, that's so nice of you. I really feel like...
And while Aubrey figures out what she's doing here...
There it is.
I'll remind everyone listening today to communicate with us on social media. We're taking your questions and comments on Twitter at ISGP Forum and on Facebook at facebook.com/ISGP Forum.
For the record, we all know that one of Aubrey's main roles and reasons for being here is that, without her, Daniela and I would be off-topic chatting about Jane the Virgin for the latest celebrity-filled festival.
Hipster.
Hey, I'm trying to be nice here.
Right, sorry.
Anyway, we'd be off-topic in 5 seconds flat.
That's true.
I'll take it.
So, to kick things off, the policy position paper we'll get most of our content from today was written by Mr. Henry Talmadge, the director of the Connecticut Farm Bureau Association. The paper was titled Profitability, the Key to Sustainable Agriculture, and you can find it under the Publications tab at scienceforglobalpolicy.org.
The paper was debated at the Institute on Science for Global Policy's conference called Socioeconomic Context of Sustainable Agriculture, held back in October 2016 with the help of students at Western Connecticut State University.
Alrighty, so when we talk about something like sustainable agriculture, it's pretty important to get some definitions straight so that we're all on the same page. In general, sustainable agriculture refers to the concept of choosing agricultural practices that have lower environmental impacts than other more conventional practices. Sustainability is achieved when natural systems are considered and even protected. So a sustainable agricultural system would put emphasis on managing soil and water resources, protecting biodiversity, and minimizing pollution.
It's like the holistic medicine of farming.
Yeah.
But Mr. Talmadge reminds us early on in his paper that working towards sustainable agriculture has been complicated because we lack a universally accepted definition of what constitutes a sustainable system. For example, if a farm gets an A+ in water conservation, but a C in preventing soil erosion, is it still sustainable? Is it sort of sustainable? Is that even a thing?
You know, it kind of reminds me of cooking competition shows on Food Network.
Love Spring Baking Championship.
Yo, me too. But really, you know how sometimes a baker had an amazingly beautiful cake and took some flavor risks, but in the end there were some technical flaws, like the cake was too dense or something?
Yes.
No.
Okay, well, whatever. Would you qualify it as a good cake? Should they be eliminated? I literally never know what the judges are going to decide. So, similarly, I promise this is relevant, if a farm isn't 100% perfectly sustainable, how can we assign whether or not it's actually sustainable?
There's even some degree of confusion about what constitutes locally grown food. So, if I buy my carrots from a farm stand 5 miles away versus a grocery store whose supplier is just 1 mile down the road, well, basically, things can get complicated when defining food's localness, for lack of better terms.
And then, those two scenarios you just described have different sustainability and overall environmental implications, too.
5 minutes in, and my head's already spinning.
Yeah, but despite these complications, the concept of and desire for more sustainable and, yes, even more local food has been around for some time. In recent years, it's become somewhat of a chic concept. I mean, we've all heard the catchphrases farm to fork or farm to table, right?
Pretty sure that's the mantra of Cleo's people.
My people?
Yeah, your, you know, hipster community.
Okay, you know what? If eating locally sourced foods makes me a hipster, then yes, sure. Proud hipster over here.
All right, settle, guys. Just as a personal observational trend, Yeah, I do think the younger generation is one group that generally has embraced local sustainable foods. But the conversation isn't limited to college students in hole-in-the-wall campus cafes.
No, you're right. That's fair. A lot of the big picture conversations about sustainable agriculture have centered around farming techniques or practices. They're actually pretty technological or scientific discussions.
And some of these techniques that you may have heard of include rotating crops in different growing seasons, planting cover crops to prevent erosion, or strategically incorporating trees and shrubs in or around crop and livestock fields.
It's obviously pretty important for food producers who are interested in adopting sustainable practices to know what strategies exist for doing so. But since the three of us, and I'm assuming most of our listeners, aren't farmers, the big question left for us to grapple with today is, why isn't sustainable agriculture more prevalent in society?
Especially considering its current fad-like popularity.
Exactly.
And to start answering this question, Mr. Talmadge brings up an interesting point. While some consumer studies have been undertaken to gauge people's interest in buying local or sustainable at the grocery store, advocates and policymakers haven't translated this, yes, we want sustainable foods mentality into actionable programs or policies.
Policies for?
For facilitating or encouraging this sort of agricultural practice.
Got it.
Instead, there's a prevailing attitude here that consumers want food that's safe, healthy, sustainable, and local. And therefore, they'll be willing to pay a pretty penny to get it. But I don't really think that's such a safe assumption to make. I mean, joking aside, if lots of young, maybe college-age-ish folks want sustainable food, well, this is one group of consumers that usually can't afford to pay that pretty penny.
So that's definitely problem number one. Problem number two, then, is most likely the fact that we haven't really found a good way to incorporate sustainable agriculture into the broader food system. And by we, I mean society.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm sure you've given this a lot of thought.
Yeah, I mean, I'd personally like to think so. The challenge here, at the society scale, though, is that conventional agriculture and sustainable agriculture are often discussed as either-or options, rather than complementary strategies.
And this is significant because we have a well-established global food system as it is. If people are assuming that to incorporate sustainable techniques, we'd need to do a complete overhaul, then of course that would seem daunting, impractical, or even impossible.
Seriously, I mean, think about it. Reimagining the entire food system would require establishing all new marketing and distribution channels. That means money, a significant investment from the food industry or the policy sphere. So yeah, it sounds realistically impossible, treating sustainable agriculture as a food system alternative.
But then there are also challenges to sustainable food systems that aren't related to social norms. There are major practical barriers to overcome as well.
These barriers include the fact that different parts of the world have different and limited growing seasons, the fact that farmland is frequently not as plentiful as we'd want or need for exclusively local production, and the fact that energy costs are high. So lots of facts.
Well, the fact...
Ugh.
The fact of the matter is that while more and more farms are trying their hand at sustainable production, the net amount of food they've been able to put out has been kind of disappointing. And we don't need to remind you for the 71st time here on the forum that our growing population is resulting in a growing demand for food. So as much as we may want or even need sustainable food production, it can't be relied on at the expense of food quantity.
Or quality.
Or quality, sure. But what I don't understand here, quite frankly, is why these farms are having a hard time meeting demand.
It's actually more intuitive than you might think. According to Mr. Talmadge, sustainable and or local food producers generally aren't making enough profit to substantially expand their sustainable and or local production practices. Basically, if you're not paying the bills with your sustainably managed cornfield, you're not going to be able to expand into sustainable tomato, lettuce, or carrot production anytime soon.
No sustainable salads. Got it.
And this is where we come to perhaps the biggest challenge of all, profitability. Without understanding the barriers to profitability that sustainable and local agriculture is currently experiencing, the entire concept of sustainable and local food will remain at the demonstration scale. It'll remain just a hipster fad.
And that, I admit begrudgingly, is actually accurate.
Well, it's these sorts of communities that are already embracing sustainable agriculture and what I think we can call its infant stages. You know, since it's still happening at a small scale in the grand scheme of things. Anyway, these communities are really passionate about their local foods. That passion, Mr. Talmadge says, is why we should be optimistic about this food movement moving beyond the hipster level.
Ugh.
Can we just call it that, though? I feel like it's not inaccurate.
Okay, well, whatever you call these passionate groups, passion isn't going to solve everything. It's a great start, yes, but costs and profits are going to rule the day here. In fact, market research seems to suggest that if sustainable and locally sourced foods can be sold at or near regular market prices, that is when consumer demand will truly skyrocket. I mean, you said it well before, Dee. How do you expect the college students to be paying top dollar?
So how do we drive down the cost?
Well, there's a tough balancing act at play here. Consider the global food system for a moment. Most major food producers have benefited from being able to scale up production using things like automation and other novel technologies to make more food with less monetary input, ultimately driving down the grocery store cost of the product.
Okay, so...
So a lot of sustainable or local systems suffer from an inability to benefit from these sorts of advantages, either because they're too expensive or because using them would completely defeat the purpose of trying to be sustainable in the first place. It's kind of the ultimate tortoise and hare scenario. The hare, like conventional agriculture, has a major advantage.
But the tortoise wins in the end.
True, but that's because the hare fell asleep.
And conventional farms aren't going to fall asleep anytime soon.
Yeah, definitely not, which is why sustainable farms need to complement rather than replace them.
Okay, but with that said, I've got to admit, it kind of sounds like there's no hope at all for expansion of sustainable systems.
Not true, though. Not true. Like Mr. Talmadge suggests in his paper's title, the key here is, perhaps unsurprisingly, the profitability factor. Make sustainable and local agriculture profitable and it'll take off.
And I think the first thing to do with that end goal in mind is to settle, once and for all, the actual consumer demand for sustainable, locally sourced food. This will require detailed market studies, which Mr. Talmadge suggests should be conducted by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, or the USDA, as well as state agricultural departments. And we totally shouldn't be surprised if some regions or states or communities are more accepting of sustainable food than others. And if that ends up being the case, it just means that sustainable food production should be facilitated in the more accepting locales more than the others.
In part, the idea here is actually to figure out just where sustainably produced foods can best fit into the global food system. Like we mentioned before, the global food system is pretty ingrained into society, so these products will do better if they can find an appropriate niche to fill, whether that be based on product type or geographic location.
In layman's terms, one might consider whether sustainable production will be a better fit for commodity crops or for specialty products. Consider corn versus habanero peppers or soy versus avocados.
I really like that you threw avocados into the mix there. I see that Danielle and I have successfully penetrated your brain with subconscious thoughts of hipsters and millennials.
Ugh, it's like ESPN or something.
And with that, millennial Aubrey escapes with a Mean Girls quote, classic.
Okay, don't give yourself too much credit. I saw the new Mean Girls musical on Broadway recently, and let's just say I haven't had songs stuck in my head this much since I saw The Greatest Showman.
Such a good movie.
I know, right?
But even Hugh Jackman can't sing and dance us out of the challenges facing sustainable agriculture.
Nice save.
Hugh Jackman can sing and dance us out of anything.
Probably. Anyway, the next step here, once we figure out consumer demand for sustainable foods, we need to understand all of the factors limiting the growth and scalability of this sort of agriculture.
This will involve analyzing the current food infrastructure existing in different regions and states. And we're not just talking about roads and bridges here. In this case, infrastructure includes things like cost and availability of seasonal production labor and even food marketing structures.
I mean, yeah, how do you compete with a slogan like, quite possibly the world's most perfect food?
Whose slogan is that?
Chiquita Banana? Seriously, you don't watch enough TV.
That's probably why I always ask for your help with pop culture analogies on our podcast.
All right, well, someone's got to take one for the team and watch E! Network and VH1 for the sake of our listeners.
Such a martyr.
Thank you so much. But to get back on track here, Mr. Talmadge claims that we also need to figure out what size operation lends itself best to sustainable production. And theoretically, this will be pretty location dependent, considering factors such as labor and land availability.
Not to mention cross-referencing local climate with product growing seasons.
Yeah, that's another good example.
Only after these technical details are sorted out can farmers, public officials, and advocates...
You mean advocates?
Only after these details are sorted out can these groups really start focusing on this profitability thing. Namely, we can work on improving production efficiency within the tenets of sustainable agriculture in order to continue driving down the costs of end products.
And according to Mr. Talmadge, federal and state grant programs should then be looking to support the sustainable food operations that are crossing their T's and dotting their I's. The operations that are essentially putting into practice all of these seemingly quite logical suggestions. He says that these food producers are the ones that are most likely to make sustainable agriculture a success.
Define success, though?
Both long-term business success and producing large quantities of sustainable slash local food.
Got it. I think Mr. Talmadge's focus on profitability is, in a way, pretty realistic, and for that matter, kind of refreshing. We live in a commercial, marketing-driven society, hence the Chiquita banana reference earlier. Saying that sustainable production won't take off unless it's profitable, I buy it.
Same.
Me too.
And that seemed to be the take of pretty much everyone who debated this paper. The debate occurred in Connecticut, like we mentioned before, so there was some local context thrown around that I think makes the point quite nicely. Namely, it was noted that the vast majority of Connecticut's 6,000 farms are not self-sustaining. So priorities for the future of sustainable agriculture in Connecticut, as an example, will really be dictated by marketplace realities.
Cost drives sales.
Bingo. And again, using Connecticut as a case study, next steps were recommended for this state that could help make locally produced foods more competitive.
Some of these recommendations include supporting essential farming practices like greenhouse growing, probably in a financial sense. There's also the idea of public support based on targeted subsidies, or even creating certification programs so that products can realistically be stamped with badges of honor.
Quite possibly the world's most local food.
That doesn't even make sense. And then the final recommendation was that consumers need to be educated in some way to increase the number of people willing to select sustainable, local foods over non-sustainable, non-local variants.
All reasonable, if predictable, suggestions. What would be really interesting was if a smaller state like Connecticut tried implementing these strategies to maximize sustainable production, basically figuring out what works and what doesn't so that a step-by-step process could be applied to other and bigger states.
An admirable sentiment, which probably means it's time to wrap up for the day because everyone knows we can't be too optimistic here on the show.
Your daily dose of Monday realism.
That's us. No, I'm just kidding. But it is time to wrap up.
Okay, so today we navigated a conversation about sustainable agriculture answering the question of, if everyone wants it, why hasn't it become mainstream?
The answer, as we teased out today, is that current sustainable or local growing practices simply can't compete economically with the larger scale productions that make up the global food system. Current profitability problems can be attributed to high production costs, lack of labor, lack of farmland, and resulting high costs on the grocery store shelves. When the locally grown variant is twice the cost of the conventionally produced item, you can guess which one the consumer will favor.
If sustainable agriculture is ever going to become mainstream and not quite so hipster,
I'm so proud of you.
We need to recognize that sustainable production will fill a niche and work in tandem with conventional production, rather than replacing it altogether. Then, strategies to increase profitability will need to be implemented.
So we'll leave you with a few questions today, as per protocol. As a consumer yourself, how inclined are you to buy local? Would you spend extra for sustainably produced food? Or would the cost of a sustainably produced item need to be the same as the conventional variant for you to select the sustainable one?
Sounds like you're conducting market research, Cleo.
I'm just genuinely really interested. I'd like to think I'm an eco-friendly, sustainable person, of course, but I'm also a graduate student and therefore relatively broke. So my choices also have to be sustainable in a must-be-able-to-feed-myself sort of way.
I can relate.
Hear, hear.
Well, feel free to embrace your inner millennial or hipster or whatever and send us your answers to Cleo's questions on social media. Our Twitter handle is at ISGPForum, and our Facebook page can be found at facebook.com/ISGPForum.
I think it's time for me to eat a piece of avocado toast while wearing a flower crown and matching lensless glasses.
Can you hear my eye roll?
No, too busy listening to my coffee shop playlist.
I literally can't. Well then, thank you to our listeners for joining us here today. We hope you enjoyed socializing with science.
And being hipster.
But mainly socializing with science. And we'll catch you next time right here on the forum. Cleo, you've got to stop trying to scare away our listeners.
The Institute on Science for Global Policy, or ISGP, is a nonprofit organization that convenes international meetings bringing together scientists, policymakers, industry leaders, students, and other stakeholders to discuss pertinent scientific issues facing society. The ISGP has no opinions and does not lobby. Therefore, the preceding podcast reflects the views expressed by the presenters and debaters at our conference. For more information, please visit our website at www.scienceforglobalpolicy.org. Thank you.